It's the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast with your host, the Wolf and Action Jackson, who are keeping rock alive by talking classic rock, hard rock, progressive rock, heavy metal, 80s music, early MTV, UK vs. US chart success, and much more. This is the home of classic album and live concert reviews, and your place for interviews with artists and legends. You're rocking with the Wolf.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to episode number 175 of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast. Brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf, and I will be joined, as usual, by my partner in crime from the East Coast of the USA, Mr. Gary Action Jackson. And we appreciate you tuning in lately. We've had a great month of March with great guests and great album reviews, a killer story from our buddy Brian at My Weekly Mixtape about seeing Blues Traveler after 9/11 on First Concert Memories. And hopefully you heard our recent First Concert Memories, number 9, with Amanda Lehman talking about seeing Rainbow for the first time in 1980. Of course, Amanda often plays with Steve Hackett, and we interviewed Steve at the start of March talking about his new album and tour, and that was a great fun episode for us, so I hope you check that out. But on this show, we're going to talk about a live review from a man who you may know, you certainly know some of his tunes, and that's Colin Hay. And of course, Colin Hay, you would know best from being the lead singer and lead songwriter from the Australian group Men at Work, who were huge in the early days of MTV. And as someone who watched a lot of MTV when he was 9, 10, 11 years old, Men at Work was a big part of that. It prompted me to go out and get their first two cassettes, Business as Usual and Cargo, which incidentally together sold more than 20 million copies around the world. So if you're a child of the 80s like me and Jackson, Men at Work was a big part of that. But as soon as they came and got huge, they just went away. And I always wondered, what happened to them? If they could write some of those great songs, why couldn't they write any more? And I just kind of always wonder that and wonder why they went away. Well, several years back, there was a documentary made about Colin called Waiting for My Real Life, which documents him growing up in Scotland and then moving to Australia, getting started in music, forming Men at Work, getting huge, then having the band fall apart, struggle with some things, some drugs and alcohol in his life, then moving to LA and getting his life back together. And while he never went back to the super heights of Men at Work, selling millions of albums or winning Grammys as they did in the early 80s, he just kind of continued to make great songs that are very personal and really show off his skills, not only as a fine guitar player, but an amazing vocalist. But honestly, the story of that show is the way he tells stories and entertains people around his songs. Talking about his life, which is incredibly interesting, and then delivering these heartfelt, personal songs every night on stage, even though the stages are a lot smaller than they were back in the Men at Work days. And so after that, I said, all right, I want to keep up with this guy. I want to know what he's up to. And when I heard he was coming near me, I said, yep, I gotta go. And I gave my daughter a ticket as a reward for doing well on playing guitar on her own right at a recital. So the two of us went over to Lexington to see Colin Hay, and boy, are we glad that we did. It was an amazing show, so much fun, so funny, such an entertaining, funny guy that if you ever get the chance to see him, you won't want to miss that. So we're going to talk about seeing his set, his routine, his stories here on The Wolf. But first, we do have a little bit of business to take care of. We always like to mention that we are proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a family of about 100 shows. There really is something in there for everyone, folks. You can check them out at pantheonpodcast.com or follow on socials at Pantheon Pods. And we have to give a shout out to our fantastic sponsor, RareVinyl.com, who is based in the UK, folks, but they ship all over the world, and they have records and singles and CDs and tour programs and posters and all sorts of rock and roll related stuff from all around the world. They take great care to procure it, take care of it, and then get it to you in the quality that you want. And they begin to our show. And a big way to support our show is to go to rarevinyl.com, find something that you love, then use code UGLY when you check out, and you can save 10%. Now, it's a one-time code, but it is good for one entire order. So yeah, you can go buy an $8 single and save yourself 80 cents and do yourself a big favor that way. Or you can go out and find that rare box set, or that hard-to-find import, or that picture disc that you always wanted, or buy all of them, and then you get 10% off the whole thing. So make sure, record collectors, you go out to rarevinyl.com, use that code UGLY, and save yourself 10%. And you know they've got some Men at Work stuff in there that would be cool for any collector to have. Now back to Colin. I just admire this guy. He's been through a lot. He went up, he came down, and he never maybe got quite back up to those huge heights of the early 80s, but they were his songs, and he has a right to go play them. And he's continued to make albums, I think something like 15 since he left that band, and is a true troubadour of the globe. And I just had a wonderful time with my daughter, listening to his stories, hearing those songs, singing along. It was really life-affirming. And I love going to live shows. I like going to the big ones, the arenas, the big noise, all that stuff. But honestly, this was really special, and I'm so glad that I did. So I'm going to share it with you here. This is my story of seeing Colin Hay from And At Work live here on The Wolf.
Well, when you first said you were going to the show, I just figured it was in Louisville, but it was not.
It was not. It's in beautiful, the Lexington Opera House.
That sounds very fancy.
Yeah, and it wasn't huge. It was not a 2,000 seater. It did have two upper decks, so there was more people there than maybe I could see from the floor down there. But I mean, it was good size, and it was, you know, it was kind of nice. It was fairly nice for the most part.
What was the crowd like?
So it was interesting because, I mean, obviously there's going to be some older people there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a cadre of younger people too. And by younger, I mean like people in their 30s and 40s, people younger than us. Mostly it was people our age and older.
Okay.
But there were some people who were, what I would call younger, given when he was big and when, and just the fact that older people are going to go to that show. But I think that the movie, Waiting for My Real Life, which you can still get on Amazon Prime, I think that had a big effect on getting more people to know his story and to know that he's still out there doing this. Because people were pretty excited and, you know, so I used to play at this place in LA, Largo. Yeah, that's right, Largo, you know, and people were kind of more animated than I thought throughout a lot of it. So, but yeah, it's fancy. It's not super fancy. It was a great night out. It was a super fun show, entertaining, funny, and he's still got it, the talent, the voice, and he's a very, very good acoustic guitar player.
So was this like I'm gonna play a song and tell you a story about how I wrote this? I mean, it wasn't just all singing, correct?
Correct. No, it was mostly him telling, he's a troubadour, he's a storyteller, and that's what he's there to do, to tell stories. And if you've seen the movie Waiting for My Real Life, some of these stories you're going to be familiar with. There's definitely new material in there, but there's the themes kind of run throughout, as far as, you know, he moved from Scotland to Australia, and, you know, his father was his first hero and owned the only music shop in town and introduced him to the Beatles when he was a wee lad, about 10 years old. And then eventually he got to know the Beatles, and he told some firsthand stories about hanging out with the Beatles last night, individually, not collectively. And it was just, he's just funny. He's got that, you would love it because he's got that wry, dry sense of humor.
Who, me? No way.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's right up your alley, man. And
he seems very, very self-effacing, very humble. I think there was probably a time when he was not that way, because if I am looking at this correctly, business as usual sold a lot of copies.
15 million at least worldwide.
Yeah, that's a ton. And I would imagine that you would feel at that point in time, this is it, that there's no stopping us now.
Well, right, you know, and that was kind of the thing. And of course, the band blew up because other people kind of, they got rich too. And they're like, well, I'm just as good. And he's like, no, you know. I've written these songs, you know.
You know, when we said that we were going to do this, I went back, I'm looking at this now, like, you know, because you kind of, you want to know, like, in the band, who was doing the heavy lifting.
Right.
He was doing the heavy lifting here. I mean, he writes the vast majority of this stuff. He has help on a couple of these, but he's on every single one of these.
That's right. Albums. And he's singing and lead for the most part. Yeah, I mean, I think there was one where he let Ron Streichert sing lead on Cargo or whatever, but
yeah
he's writing the songs, he's out front singing all the songs. And he talked a little bit about that, but he also said, this is Lexington, Kentucky. I've been here before. It's 1982. It's like, yeah, it's when you were opening for Fleetwood Mac at Rupp Arena. When your song, you know, Who Can It Be Now, was going to number one on the charts, and the album eventually went to number one for something like 15 weeks, maybe not consecutive, but total, in 1982.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, and they won Grammy for Best New Artist. I mean, it's they were hot. They were big. And then Cargo was right on its heels. And then it all kind of went away very quickly.
Right. And then they had the whole thing with that stupid lawsuit. That was not that long ago, but still, that was, I think, a big drain on him financially and emotionally also. Yeah.
And on his family. His father was like really pissed off about it. And his Greg Hamm, who was the other, I would say the other heavy lifter, in that he played the sax, he played the flute, he played the keyboard, he sang backup, he played guitar. I mean, he was a huge part of the sound of Men at Work. And he did the flute for Down Under, which is the part that is, you know, allegedly like the Kookaburra song. So yeah, he felt bad about that when he died. Before he died, he was like, I can't believe I'm going to be remembered as somebody who copied something. So yeah, that was a tough time, but it was great because he did kind of start off talking about growing up in Scotland and then move into Australia, and how like in Scotland, he went to a Protestant school. He didn't really know anything about Protestantism, except that he wore a blue blazer to school. And then he had to walk by the Catholic school going home, and they wore the red blazers, and they would bash him if they caught him walking by. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like the Catholics to me.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it says that in the Bible too.
Yeah.
Anyone who's not your faith, you need to beat up.
You need to beat the snot out of. And so, you know, he's like, okay, I saw they were going to bash me. So I just ran up to them and hit them first. Like, preemptive strike. And then I ran past and they kind of looked dazed, like, what, did he just hit us? You know? And then they start chasing me. So I'm running through the streets there, but I'm looking good. Like, I see myself in the shop windows with that blue blazer. I'm like, fuck, I look good. You know, he was just so funny about the whole thing. He's like, but my dad was my first hero, because then I could see my dad's car parked up ahead with the door open, with dad kind of waving me in. And he's like, sorry, not today, boys. He's like, yeah, my dad was my first hero. So, but it was also funny because, you know, he tells a story about you moved to Australia and people are like, what kind of accent that? It's like, oh, it's a Scottish accent. He's like, yeah, you can't talk like that around here, mate. You got to talk like us. You know, so I adapted the Australian accent so I wouldn't get beat up. But it was beautiful because it was like, suddenly I'm in a sunny place where people wear shorts and flip-flops, and, you know, going to the beach is something you do, and you get your buddy's mom to drive you there, which is great because I fancied my buddy's mom because she was hot. In Scotland, I didn't fancy any of my buddy's moms, you know, because they weren't hot.
You know, I know a couple of guys from the UK, and they're all, to me, they're always talking about their vacations, where they're going to go, where they've come back from. Well, okay, that's great. But if you don't have the money to do that, it's got to be pretty bleak living in Scotland without any kind of chance to get out of there. So yeah, I can imagine going to Australia, where the sun's out every day, everybody's into the beach lifestyle. It's got to be pretty terrific.
Yeah, it's like moving to California.
Correct.
You know, yeah. And he's like, all right, son, we're moving to Australia. Is that a long way away, Dad? Yeah, son, it's about as far as you can go before you have to start coming back, you know?
And just to say goodbye to everything. I mean, that's just it. It's not like, oh, we'll go there for a couple weeks and then we'll come back. This is it. We're never coming back, as far as he knew then.
Yeah, no, and it was ballsy, you know? I mean, you just move halfway across the world, north to south, and as far east as you can go, basically, until you're coming back home at some point. So, yeah, but, you know, it's a hearty life. You can eat well. You can exercise. All sorts of work opportunities, skilled and unskilled, you know. Can own a home that's not connected to somebody else's home, which is pretty rare, you know, unless you're incredibly rich in the UK. So, yeah, you know, it was good for him. But it was great because he would tell these stories, and then he would sing a song, you know, and then he'd go back to telling more stories and stuff like that.
Hi, this is Gary Kemp.
And this is Guy Pratt.
And you're listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London
podcast.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
The only thing was, I think he may have been battling a little bit of spring pollen in his throat. Because maybe the first song or so, I could hear there's a little something in his throat. And he kept going back to, he had like a bottle of something over on his little stand. It was just, it was him. There was a coat rack for some reason. Maybe in case he got warm and wanted to take off his coat, he could hang it up there. Didn't touch it though. And then he had three acoustic guitars behind him. And he kind of rotated through them for different songs. And then he had a little stand over to his left, which had this bottle of something. And I assumed it had some like lemon tea or something in there to help his voice. Now, his voice sounded fantastic and he could really belt it out. And he did it a few times. I was impressed because he's 70 years old. Still just fantastic voice. But even between like singing songs, he couldn't even get out some of the stuff he wanted to say without having to run over there and have some of that. Plus, he, it looks like, because I wasn't counting. I was for a while, but then I stopped. It looks like he played about 15 songs, whereas most other nights in this tour, he's doing like 17 or maybe 16. So I think he maybe said, all right, I'm not going to go super long on this. You know, my throat's not perfect. But, you know, you wouldn't, the average person, I'm sure, had no idea he was having anything going on with him.
So, okay, so there was no band. It was just him.
Just him.
Okay. And I kind of wish, well, I don't know, and maybe they do, and I just don't know, but I like that concept, especially for a guy who's in this stage of his career. You know, he's had a whole bunch of success. He's had a downtime. Now he's back. I want to know the stories behind some of these things. I want you to tell me what your life has been like. It doesn't have to be all music. You can stretch these things out.
Right. You know, and I agree with you. I think more people, certainly of his age, you don't need a whole band, which is expensive, which is hard on your ears and all that kind of stuff. After a while, it's like, just if you can sing and play, just go out there and do it and tell the stories about your songs. And of course, yeah, again, like you said, he's self-effacing. Like the first song, Going Somewhere. It's like, I wrote that when I was going nowhere. You know, I wrote that, you know, like my career just seemed like it was over. And you know, I left Australia because a lot of my friends were high functioning drunks and drug addicts. So I needed to get cleaned up. So I moved to LA. Of course, that gets me laugh out of the crowd. Like, yeah, that's not where you go to clean up. He goes, but it worked for me, you know, and he's been sober for, you know, he's like, and you know, it's tough stopping drinking. If you've ever done it, it's hard to do and you fall off and you get back on. But, you know, once
Especially in that kind of situation where it's like you're kind of not in a great place in your life anyway, and now you want to give up this thing that kind of gives you, I mean, it's not great for you, but it gives you comfort. It's tough because, you know, you want to have something that propels you forward.
Well, right. Yeah. But he had to give up his old haunts and his old friends and all that kind of stuff. And
basically it sounded like start over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Bought this place in Topanga Canyon and he's like, so I'll get up in the morning and then I'll make myself breakfast and I'll clean the dishes and I'll sweep off the porch and I'll, you know, do this and that. And I'm like, well, that's 5:45 in the morning. Now what the hell do I do? you know, but he's like, I'm an optimist. I'm an eternal optimist. You know, I've made 15 albums since I left my old band and just keep thinking, you know, one of them's going to hit, but maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
So was it like, would you say it was, because we talked about the crowd a little bit, but I mean, was it sold out? Was it fairly full?
It was fairly full, especially the bottom was fairly full. And I'll tell you this, we had the two seats down that was maybe 10 rows back or something like that. But 3 feet in front of us was a big pole holding up the upper deck there. And so the wolf cub was next to me. She had a pretty straight view right to him. But I'm sitting here, and the pole's basically in the way. I'm like, this sucks. I don't recall seeing anything that said obstructed view when I bought this ticket. But the good news was, so we're on the side, and there was only one seat to the right of me.
Okay.
And nobody sat there. So I just scooted over that one seat. And then I could see great. I had perfect view of him, you know. So then there was a seat between me and my daughter, and we would just kind of hold hands in the seat between. But you know, she was cracking up, and I said, look, because she hates bad language. I said, he's gonna drop a couple of F-bombs in here. You just got to be ready for it. She goes, yeah, but he's funny. He's not like he's yelling at everybody saying those F-bombs. He's telling a funny story. I'm like, you're right. Yeah, but just be prepared because she doesn't like that stuff. But it was great, you know, and he was talking about how he had that gig at Largo for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He said, one night, the guy comes, says, Paul McCartney's down there. I was like, yeah, right. Of course he is. And then the guy who runs the place is like, no, Paul is down there and he does want to see you. He goes, oh, he does. It's all right then. So he comes down there and he did a great Paul McCartney person. Oh, hey, how you doing? Yeah, there he is. That's you. How you doing? Cool. You know, it was sounded just like him. And he was good. He's good at doing American voices and Scottish voices and Australian voices. He's a great kind of minor bird. And he's talking about how after the gig, they go to this like private bar above the place, and Paul's in there and he's holding court, and it's like, Paul was in the Beatles. Don't know if you know that. And at some point it's just the two of us talking, and I'm like, what do you say to a Beatle? And they kind of start about recording and how it's different. And he told this great story about, he goes, yeah, I used to make up a song, and then I would get on the bus with John and I'd show him my song and he'd show me his song, and we'd work our song together on the bus ride to the studio. And then we hook up with George and he'd never heard it, so he'd bang out the basic chords. And then at some point an engineer in like a suit and like a white, you know, coat, a lab coat, kind of comes in like, all right lads, it's your turn. So they would go in there and then they record that song and maybe another one that morning and maybe more in the afternoon. It's like, that's how we used to do it. I'm like, wow, that's so cool. Because in the movie, he didn't say this in the show, but in the movie he said, you know, how when they lived in Scotland, his dad owned the only music shop in town, which is not only the only place where you could get a guitar or a drum set or something like that, but it's the only place you could buy records. And so one day he comes in, he's like, hey, come here. I want to show you something. I like these guys. These are new. I think they'll do pretty well, you know, and it was the Beatles, you know, and now he hangs out with the Beatles and plays with the Beatles.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's kind of an amazing story, but obviously it's a little name droppy, but you don't get the sense like he's bragging about it. He's just like, so here's a story about the time Paul McCartney met me after the show. And he's like, so then it got quiet for a minute and he goes, we want to come to your house. You want to come to my house? Yeah. All right. Well, I go on tour Thursday. So Paul's like, we'll come Wednesday. All right. You want me to make you some food? Yeah. So I guess you could say you're coming for dinner. It's like, yeah, Paul McCartney's coming to my house for dinner. So then that day I'm down in the studio messing around and I come upstairs and I hear this guy whistling a tune, walking up my driveway. And there he's again. Oh, hey, there you are. Cool. Good to see you. It's like, that's Paul McCartney coming to my house.
And they said, I want to come to your house. I said, you want to come to my house? And they go, yeah. I said, well, go on tour on Thursday. And they said, well, what kind of Wednesday? I said, okay. I said, you want me to get you something to eat? I said, yeah. I said, so you could say you're coming for dinner? Yeah. So they came on the Wednesday. She came up early. I came walking up the steps from the studio and I'm standing there at the bottom of the drive. I see this guy walking down the driveway, kind of whistling down the drive. And all the years of being in the music shop when I was growing up and having Beatles posters on the wall, walking, flooding back, and this flood of emotion, and I just thought to myself, I had a private moment to myself right then where I just thought, wow, Paul McCartney's walking down my driveway. Well, there you are, man. Yeah, great, really cool.
That must be so cool.
Well, he did mention that in the movie too, and or part of it, and it always seemed like, yeah, it wasn't like, oh, I'm so special that this happened to me. It was more like, I can't believe this is happening to me.
Yeah, kind of, you know. So I mean, it's just cool, and you know, he did a couple covers, and You know, he would tell the story, like, you know, when his mom died or whatever, he went to scatter their ashes. Like, I don't know if you've ever done that before, but it quickly turns into an ecological disaster. And it kind of goes everywhere. And it just turns out that we were sprinkling it in the sea. And then it, you know, it washed up onto some starfish or whatever. And that's where his song Starfish and Unicorns came from, was this experience of, you know, kind of saying goodbye to his parents or saying, you know, this is your new home now among the starfish and the thing. So that was cool. And then he eventually goes, because he only plays 4-minute work songs, and kind of the big ones. Who Can It Be Now? It's a Mistake, Overkill, and Down Under. And Overkill and Down Under are pretty close to the end of the set. The first one he does is Who Can It Be Now? So after he does like a half an hour, because he did a lot more storytelling and joke telling in the first 45 minutes to an hour than he did in the last hour. And I think that had something to do with the fact that he had something going on with his throat, that he kept drinking that tea or whatever was in that canister over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time he gets to the fifth song, he's like, all right, I guess I better do a Men at Work song now, or do a song by my old band, you know. Because there's people who come to the show just to see the Men at Work stuff. And if I don't play it for a while, they kind of go,
am I in the right place?
Yeah, exactly. Am I in the right place? What's he doing up there? What song is it? Is this the guy or not? You know? So he's funny about it. But he talks about how it went to number one in America, but only number two in Australia.
Ooh.
But it's great, you know, and he sings the whole thing. And then on this, on Who Can It Be Now and on Overkill, on It's a Mistake and Who Can It Be Now, He clicks one of his, because he had a lot of little, he was messing with his toys a lot. He was clicking a lot of pedals and a lot of buttons there with his feet.
Okay.
And in the middle of those, he'll click that and then it'll run a track so that he can then play the lead part, which of course was generally always played by Ron Streichert in the band, but he doesn't have a band. So that's the only time he would use any like quote unquote help. There's never a drum track or anything like that. That allowed him to do other things. And he played them brilliantly. He was such a good acoustic guitar player. I was really impressed. I was knocked out by it, to be honest with you.
Is it the man come to take me away? Why do they follow me? It's not the future that I can see. It's just my fantasy.
Yeah, I think that he got tagged to play that song Overkill from that show Scrubs.
Yep.
And I think that was the first time I'd ever heard it acoustic and thought, you know, that works really well.
Yes.
So it's yeah, it kind of took on a whole nother life after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, being honest, he didn't talk about it during the show because I guess he's talked about it a lot, but that was a big deal for him. There's no doubt about it. Getting picked up by the guys on Scrubs and then getting Zach to put one of his songs in his Garden State movie was a big deal for him, because that was like a platinum selling soundtrack, which really doesn't happen that much anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The movie soundtrack was.
Yeah. So it was great. It was just a great night. It was cool to hear some of those classic songs. It reworked a little bit. I mean, a different treatment with the acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
But just to hear his stories and some of the reasons he wrote some of these songs. And
I think that's the thing for us, is that's what I want to know. I want to know how this came to you, because it's one thing when you write songs just to write them. Like I see people, like professional songwriters, and not that he's not, but you take personal experiences and put them to music. And so I want to know where you got that from.
Yeah. Yeah. Or why you picked it. If it's a cover, you know, he said during the pandemic's like a get up, I'd eat breakfast, and now what the fuck am I going to do all day? You know, so like, I don't know. All right, I'll make a covers album, you know? So he made a covers album, and it had this song, a Kinks song called Waterloo Sunset, which I think was playing on the ship when he left Scotland. And
okay.
And he's like, this is by the great Ray Davies. And there may be some songs as good as this, but I don't know that they're any better. And to give, you know, praise to it, you know, and it was great. He did an amazing job of it. Praise to someone else like that. It's not just about, well, my song hit number one and, you know, that's why I'm going to play it. No, you know, it's he's.
You can tell he's a fan of music also.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I don't need no friends, as long as I gaze on Waterloo Sunset, I am
And then you'll love this too. So he's like, and then after it comes out, I go over to Ringo's house and I'm walking up his driveway. And who's there? I bump into the great Steve Lukather. Because why wouldn't Steve Lukather from Toto just be like in Ringo's driveway, right?
Sure.
And the wolf cub got excited about that because I go, hey, that's the guy from Toto who with the big white hair. He's like, oh, wow, that's cool. All right. And he's kind of showing him the album or whatever. Then here comes Ringo. Oh, hey, lads. Yeah. What do you got there? The record, have you? I couldn't do the Ringo voice, but he did it really well. And he goes, let's see. Oh, yeah, you got that on there? I like that. Yeah. Oh, we got a couple of ours on there. Yeah, that's good. I like that. He's like, do you want to keep that record then? Ringo's like, nah. And just handed it back to him. But it's like, but I toured with him because he was in the Beatles too, you know.
Yeah.
Don't know if you know that. So just very wry and dry and entertaining and having fun strumming his guitar. And it's just like, this is something he signed up for a long time ago. You could sit there and lament, I'm not on top of the world. I'm not playing arenas anymore. I don't sell millions of copies of records even close anymore. Mm-hmm. That's not it. But is this where I'm supposed to be? And it's maybe it is. Maybe
right.
It is.
Right. And it's cool that he can recognize that. And he's not one of these guys that like you haven't. He just kind of regressed into doing nothing. And it from the movie anyway, it seems like he understands that, yeah, this is where he's supposed to be. And he accepts it 100% and is embracing it now. This is who I am now.
Yeah. Yeah. But he still gets the thrill out of hearing his songs played. And he knows the people know the Men at Work stuff. So when it gets to the end of Who Can It Be Now, where you get the, who can it be now?
Yeah.
The audience is forced or encouraged, let's say, to do the, and I loved it. I'm singing along. Wolf Cub's singing along. Everyone's doing it. You know, it was awesome. And same with It's a Mistake. You have to sing the, it's a mistake. So you can go the, it's a mistake. It's a mistake. We had to sing that along with him to kind of keep it going. So I thought that was, little crowd participation is always cool, and he encouraged it, especially when it's like, I know you know this one. And I thought It's a Mistake was cool because I'd heard him do the other Men at Work stuff acoustic, either on the show or just on my Alexa or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'd not heard his version of It's a Mistake yet. And that
worked.
And it worked. It was great. I was so glad that he did it. I was so psyched. And like I said, he had a track that he clicked, so the rhythm could be on where he did Streichert's old solo, except he's on an acoustic instead of an electric. And I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. That's great. And I always love that video too, because it's an anti-war song basically, but they did it funny. I thought their videos back in the day were brilliant, just brilliant.
Yeah. They seem to really embrace that and use it as a storytelling device to enhance the song.
Yeah. And they had fun with it. They didn't take it too seriously. They're obviously actors. And I guess Colin kind of came up as an actor who then got into music kind of thing. He also talked about how big weed is in Australian culture and how you were either kind of a drinker or you were a weed smoker. Mm-hmm. He's like, and the drinkers just, eventually they get very violent. And that was not my scene. So I started off with the weed, you know. And he's telling a story how somebody brought this spliff over one day. They started smoking it. And then they got together and wrote a song that ended up on Business as Usual. Down by the Sea, I think, was the song he was talking about.
Okay.
He goes, but we got so stoned out. You know, the original version was 4 hours and 40 minutes long.
He's like, I didn't tighten that up for the album version.
Yeah, you know. He's like, I really didn't start drinking until I was 27. But I quickly realized that I was an alcoholic, which kind of sucks. Like, you want a good 30, 40 years of heavy drinking under your belt before you make a realization like that. But I realized it pretty early. And so he was kind of old when they broke through, quote unquote. I mean, in 1983, he was 30 while we were 10.
Okay.
He was 30. And so most of those new artists are like 22 or something like that, you know, when they win that award.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't just a kid. And so they're selling, you know, millions of albums around the world and, you know, it's free drinks everywhere. And so he gets into it and then his band falls apart. He's still the talent, so he's got to carry on. He tries it with MCA as a solo artist, but the records don't really go anywhere and he's drinking through it anyway. So eventually he figures out he needs to quit. He moves to America. His life takes on this different trajectory. And like I said, it might be better that he is.
That he didn't stay there and keep doing the same things over and over and over again in Australia.
That's right. Yeah, because he could have just toured Australian pubs forever if he wanted to. But
yeah,
I think he wanted to get out of there and get a new life. And, you know, he got unmarried from his wife at the time, who is probably a blessing for her to get away from, you know, a raging alcoholic and, you know, guy doing a lot of drugs and stuff. So, I mean, it all worked out. It's just, it's a good story because there's so many. I hit it big and then it was over. I destroyed myself. And that was it.
Right.
That's right. The end of the story. And that's a common story.
Right. Either they're still around, but they're just a shell of themselves, or they're not here anymore because they drank themselves into the grave.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's a story of triumph. It doesn't just go straight up. You know, there's ups and downs in life.
Yeah. That's the thing too. Like, can you accept the down part? Can you accept this is part of it? And what do I do with this? Do I run away or do I pivot and accept this?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's great and happy to be together when you're going up.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start on the down cycle, then it's like, okay, how's this going to work out? And it doesn't always. But yeah, self-effacing again. It's like, you know, I wrote all those hits. You say that, I wrote all those hits. There were five. There were five. You know? I think there were six. I don't know if he counts Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive as a hit. I do.
That was a hit. Come on.
They made a video out of it.
Right. It was a single. It was a hit. Come on.
But I think he only counts Who Could It Be Now, Down Under, Be Good Johnny, It's a Mistake, and what's the other one?
Overkill.
Overkill, right. But I count Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive. The video was hilarious.
Right. I think that song would work acoustic too.
Maybe, yeah. I'm sure he could do it. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure he could do it. Yeah, no doubt about it. I was just loving the stories, and then you hear his incredible voice, and it was such a cool night out. It was like I really did forget about my worries for a couple hours there. Usually I'm like, oh, should I be taking video of this for the show? You know, I got an hour drive home in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. What have I got to do tomorrow? I was at the Journey concert. And there's everything, right? There's huge screens. There's a big stage. The guy's dancing around, you know, getting the people fired up. You can watch the keyboard player. You can watch the drummer. You can watch whomever. But here it's just this guy and his guitar and a microphone singing from his heart.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, you go to a show like that and you know, it's super loud. There's a million people. Everybody's screaming. This is much more calm. There's only one person to pay attention to, and he's telling you a story. Yeah, can you be more engaged with that?
And I was. Absolutely was.
And how did your daughter like it?
She did. She loved it. She thought it was hilarious. And she was great for like the first hour, because he starts at about 8:10. She usually goes to sleep at about 9 thereabouts. And she took a little nap in the car on the way over, because it's a little more than an hour drive over. So I'm like, good, you take a nap.
Right.
Because I don't want you falling asleep. Charge those
batteries. Yeah. Yeah.
But still, I mean, you get past 9, it's just, that's her rhythm. She's going to be tired.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she starts getting a little tired. And when they start playing some of the songs that she doesn't know, like just his solo stuff, that's easier for her to fall asleep on. When she knows the song, it's going to wake her up. But I let her kind of doze for a little while there when he's kind of talking. Because like doing the Gathering Mercury song, found out that was about a buddy of his who he was good friends with growing up. Great friends throughout their lives. He died a few years ago. But before he died, Colin reached out to him. Like, I hadn't talked to him in a while, so I reached out to him. He goes, hey, man, what's going on? He goes, well, I died twice. Like, what? Because he had an autoimmune disease and he was always on all sorts of medication and stuff basically throughout all his life. And then he talked about, two different times I flatlined and was in a coma, once for like 9 days and once for like 5 days. He's like, oh my God, man, I can't believe it. He goes, yeah, there is a light. There is a light, but I didn't go into it. He goes, why not? He goes, well, I knew I had some unpaid parking tickets to take care of. I'm like, what? And then he said, you know, and there is a presence there. What, are you talking about God? He's like, I don't know, but there is a presence and it is benign. It's like, okay, well, that's good. Good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty heavy duty.
Yeah. And so then he wrote the song Gathering Mercury about him.
Is this all I've been and all I am and will be until I cross over? One life is all I can see until it's all over. I'm gathering mercury.
And before that, it was, you know, Now in the Evermore, which I think was also a song. He's like, I don't want you to think all my songs are about death, but this is about my buddy and he died. But I loved it. And you know what? Another thing that was really cool about it was after he did Overkill, you know, that kind of brings the house down. Everyone's standing up cheering. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, I'm going to do a couple more songs for you. I could leave and come back, but what's the point? You know, like, you know, the encore is kind of expected. It's like, nah, you know, I'm just going to step into it. It's like, you know, there's nothing back there anyway, you know? And he kind of looks back there. He's like, just a guy falling asleep in a chair. Because, I mean, that's the thing. He didn't even have a guitar tech. He must have had a roadie because I saw somebody come out and put some stuff like on his little table there a couple times. Because we got there early. Doors opened at 7 and we walked right in. Because we got there. I wanted to get there early because I wanted to beat traffic. I was disappointed that they didn't have any 2XL t-shirts in there. I'm like, dude, this is the United States of America. We're a bunch of fat pieces of shit. You have got to have bigger t-shirts. Because there's one, he only had two. One said Colin Hay, but one said Waiting for My Real Life to Begin. I'm like, that's perfect for me. I'm going to get one of those. Because these are the kind of artists you ought to support. Like, you don't need to buy a $50 Journey t-shirt. Okay? That's ridiculous. And besides, they don't need that money. But someone like Colin Hay, support him. And so what if the CDs are $20 or the LPs are $30 or whatever, and you can get them cheaper on Amazon? Get the Journey stuff cheaper on Amazon. This is when you should support the artist because you know the money goes to them and goes to these roadies who aren't together enough to get double XL t-shirts for people in the middle of America. But that was his encore. He goes into Waiting for My Real Life to Begin, which I love, is a great song. And I guess he wrote it after he got dropped by his record label, MCA. It was kind of time to self-evaluate and say, all right, you know, what do I do? Well, I'll figure something out. And it's just a great song.
And you say, be still, my love. Open up your heart. Let the light shine in. Don't you understand? Oh, I already have a plan. I'm waiting for my real life.
And of course he goes into Down Under at the end, but the most magical part, and I'll send it to you because I did go ahead and record it. He goes into Down Under and he does the second line, the second verse, you know, buying bread from a man in Brussels, 6'4" and full of muscles. I said, do you speak my language, brother? He does that. And then he goes into a little riff before he goes in the third verse. Except when he comes back, he goes into buying bread from a man in Brussels. He kind of forgot he had just done it. But God bless him. He just stayed with it. He's like, I didn't do this one. 6'4", full of muscle. And the crowd loves it. They're going nuts. Now, I've been there when somebody skips a verse. Like, they're supposed to do the second, and they went to the third instead. It was Sting, in fact, in London, which was on episode, I don't know, 70-something. I think it was. Anyway, yeah. But it was great, because when he gets to the part about, he just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. He goes, he smiled and gave me another Vegemite sandwich. And it just brought the house down. They're just like, this is great. I love this, you know.
Well, Okay. So remember we were talking to Steve Hackett and he said something about that. Like he was upset with himself because he thought he had made a mistake in one of his shows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody necessarily knew, right?
And the thing is, it's a live show. You want stuff like that. That's a good story to tell. Did he make a mistake? Yes. Did he get upset about it? No. He just kept it rolling and it's a fun part of the show.
Yeah. And he could have just pivoted back and said, all right, let me get the guitar back and I'll go into the third one. No. He just sang it again, only adjusted the lyrics
right
to reflect the situation. I'm like, and now that is a troubadour. That's a guy who's a pro, who thinks on his feet, and lets us enjoy the extra second verse of Down Under, right?
This is a live show. You never know what's going to happen. Here we go.
Yeah, it was great. I was laughing so hard at that. I was like, that is awesome. I can't wait to tell Jackson about that.
Yeah, if you've got that, I'd love to see it.
I didn't, because my video was so bad, I really just recorded the audio, but you can hear it pretty well.
Okay.
But speaking of Sting, I can't remember what song it was, but he, for some reason, he brought up Sting. It's like, that Sting, he's carved out a pretty good life for himself, yeah? And he goes, yeah, and then he kind of shakes his head, fuck. like Sting lives this life and I don't, you know? And everyone laughs, and then again, he goes, fucker, you know, that goddamn Sting. It's like, it's hard going through your life with just one name, you know. It's like, if you're in the CVS, you don't go, oh, look, there's Gordon Sumner. No, you say, oh, no, there's Sting, you know. Or if you're in the Costco and you see Ringo, you don't say, oh, there's Richard Starkey. You say, there's Ringo, you know. Or if you're in the Home Depot and you see Bono, you don't say, oh, there goes Paul Hewson. You say, there goes Bono. It's like the Edge is right behind him. You say, you don't say, hey, there goes whatever the fuck his name is. It's so funny.
Hi, this is Steve Hackett, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London.
You know, and then again, the self-effacing thing is like, I was in the market the other day, and Who Can It Be Now comes on. And I never do this, but for whatever reason, I'm checking out. I tell the girl, I wrote that song. She's like, what? That song, I wrote that song. She goes, uh-huh. Paper or plastic. But sometimes, you know, when I'm in the CVS and I'm ninth in line, I just want to scream out, hey, I'm a platinum-selling Grammy Award-winning songwriter, you sacks of shit. Let me go get my medication first. But I never do. And then I get up there. Oh, yeah. Hello. Yeah. 629.53. Yeah, that's me. And then he kind of showed himself getting the enormous receipts like you do from the CVS.
Yeah.
He's like, it's the Dead Sea Scrolls that comes out of there.
Take this survey. I'm not going to ever take that survey.
So I can't honestly recommend the show enough. You could have even not known any of the songs. You could have been born under a rock. Never heard any of the Men at Work songs. And if you just have a sense of humor and you enjoy live music, you could go in there and just have the best night. And if you know the songs and appreciate the stories that he's telling, you'll love it. And, you know, I would, anytime he's within driving distance, I will not miss him for the rest of my life.
Okay. Well, that's a glowing recommendation there. I think after seeing that movie, I would say it was the same thing. He just seems like a guy who's just entertaining. Like even if he didn't play any music and just sat there and told stories, you'd still be engrossed in what he was saying and the way he was saying it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the last real troubadours, but it's still funny because it was basically the exact same thing he did in the movie. Was like when he's doing the opening to Waiting for My Real Life to Begin, thinking about how, okay, I used to be this huge star and now I'm, you know, playing for fine folks like yourselves, but you know, am I ever going to get back to the top? And is it okay to be playing the Lexington Opera House? And it turns out that it's not. I made this plan. I wrote this song more than 30 years ago. I have a long-term plan.
Clearly, I have a long-term plan. But along the way, I had to ask myself a serious question. But if I never get back to those lofty peaks, I'm
back to the top where I so obviously deserve to be. It's just fun. I mean, if you don't have fun at that show, there is something wrong with you.
There's something wrong with you, yeah.
You know, and even the Sonny Poonies, who are like, no, it's got to be hard rock, you know, or at least be Richard Marx with a big band or whatever. If you go to that show and you don't have fun, there's something wrong with you.
So your overall, you enjoyed it. Your daughter enjoyed it. Did she? I'm sure she stayed up with you the entire time on the ride home.
Well, that wasn't my intention, and she got in the back seat.
Oh boy!
So she could lay down.
Right.
So I figure she's asleep back there, and I'm getting on the highway, and then I don't want to fall asleep. I don't want to get sleepy on the highway, so I call my other old roommate named Gary, because he's in California, and if it's 10:30 for me, it's 7:30 for him, so I can call him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because when he and our roommate Aaron visited me about 7 years ago or something like that in Louisville, I had just seen the Waiting for My Real Life documentary and told him how great it was and how cool Colin Hay was, and you guys have got to see the documentary. And then Gary went back to LA, and like within a week, he took his girlfriend to see some live music, and Colin Hay jumped up on stage with this band and started playing. He's like, look at this, Mac B. I wouldn't even know who this is if it weren't for you, you know. So I wanted to talk to him about the show.
Mm.
And then, you know, I realized we haven't talked in a while, so it was easy to talk for 45 minutes to him just because it had been so long. Because I did it on, like, the car speaker, the Wolf Cup could hear everything we were saying. Which isn't always a good thing when we talk about some of the stuff we talk about. So, you know, and then she's like excited to chime in on the conversation. So then, yeah, we get home at like 11:20 and she's not, I mean, she's tired obviously, but she's not sleepy. So I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm not number one dad, but I feel like I'm still up there, man.
And like you said, it's the day before spring break starts. They're not going to do anything today anyway. So
yeah, no, great set, great night. An evening with Colin Hay. And yeah, he didn't even play as many songs as maybe he could have, but he played all the ones I knew. I played the ones that I really loved, told some great stories, did it with a smile on his face, twinkle in his eye, I guess. Highly recommended.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad that worked out.
It's really about telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's certain songs he has to play, certain Men at Work songs, certain of his solo songs.
Right.
And then the rest, he can kind of jibe a little bit, whatever he's feeling, whatever the crowd is giving him. he can kind of do what he needs to do.
And it looks like, I know you've done this a million times. I get it. It's a show. But the trick is to make it think like you're just rambling. Like, oh, hey, I just thought of this. And now I'll play this song. When you know it's scripted out. But I think that's the genius part that's the showman part of it, is to make it seem like this is, hey, I'm just kind of doing this on a random day. You know, you could be at my house hearing these stories.
I'd love to be at his house at a random day. That would be so cool. Well, that's me talking about seeing Colin Hay live in Lexington on his one-man show. Such a fun and entertaining and funny night out. Grew up listening to Colin Hay and Men at Work, loving those songs as a young man, and they kind of disappeared. And I'm just so glad that he's still out doing it. And he's still making new music. Yes, he's playing some of the great hits from the 80s. Overkill, Down Under, Who Can It Be Now? It's a Mistake. But he's moved forward in his life. And just because he's not on top of the world, not selling millions of records, not selling out arenas, he's still doing the thing that he loves, which is playing live music for people who are willing to pay. Can't recommend it highly enough. If Colin Hay's coming to your town or coming near you, just go. It's not like you're going to say, well, that was a waste of my time, or I wish I hadn't spent the money on that. It's so entertaining. It's so much fun. And yeah, my 9-year-old loved it. So I don't care if you're 9 or 90 or anywhere in between. See Colin, hear his stories. You'll be better off for doing it. So we want to know, folks, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? Did we leave out your favorite part? You have to let us know. You can email us. It's uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. You can let us know the bands, the albums, the concerts, the books, the DVDs, the rock properties you want to hear us talk about here on the show. And make sure you subscribe and download wherever you get your podcast. Those downloads are huge to the lifeblood of growing this show. And if you're thinking about it, hey, wherever it is you listen, go ahead and give us a positive, hopefully a 5-star review. It just helps us grow the show, helps us find more rock and roll fans like you. Thanks, as always, to Pantheon Podcast for making us part of the family. And thanks to RareVinyl.com, where if you use the code UGLY when you check out, you can save yourself 10% off your entire order. That's it for this show. We do have some killer albums coming up to review and some more great guests that I think you're going to love hearing from. So stay tuned. And to all of you rock and rollers all around the world, be cool and keep doing what you do to keep rock alive.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.